Hey, this is Ash with Horror Fix. I've actually got a special treat for everybody tonight. We are talking to PJ Starks. PJ was one of the directors, writers, producers of the first Volumes of Blood, a very cool horror anthology that we simply loved here at Horror Fix. And he is a writer-producer on the upcoming Volumes of Blood 2. Now, what is the official working title for Volumes of Blood 2, PJ?
It is Volumes of Blood Horror Stories.
Well, that works. That's fitting.
Right. Well, it fits the project for a couple different reasons. A, the whole entire thing takes place in a house, and every floor has a different story that takes place. And so every story of the house has a story. And then also, sorry, my kids are downstairs yelling. I'm upstairs in my bedroom currently. So anyway,
it's what they do. It's what they do. They're like the Terminators of distraction.
I know.
It's what they do.
Like, hey,
it's kids, all they do.
I'm going to do a podcast. Right. I'm going to do a podcast. Try to calm it down. Okay. No.
Yeah. We'll just turn the fuck with you all the way up to 11 because that's what we do.
And that's exactly what. And they're arguing over something really, like a potato or something. It's really dumb.
Right. It can't be anything worthwhile. It's like even a hangnail I would accept. But at this point,
exactly.
It's like one of them's crying over a Skittle he lost 3 years ago at Christmas. It's like, you've got to be kidding me.
Anyway, to get back on topic, we didn't really want to call it Volumes of Blood 2 because while it is a sequel, it's loosely connected to the first film. So technically, it has pretty much its entire own, like its own cast, its own stories. It really only ties into the first film through a few different facets. So ultimately, you don't really have to have seen the first film to enjoy the sequel. And that's kind of the way I wanted to do it. Even the original idea was a full-blown sequel, and then I decided to scrap that, and we went with this whole other concept I'd come up with for the sequel. And it is a sequel, but it's not a sequel.
Well, you know, the subtitle is so self-explanatory that unless somebody has chromosomal damage, I mean, they can't really say that they didn't get what they paid for. I mean, with Volumes
exactly.
of Blood Horror Stories, it's not exactly as if they're getting like a riveting drama about, a gay Polish guy in Nazi-occupied Germany. I mean, you're getting horror stories.
Oddly enough, that is one of the stories. It must have leaked onto the internet.
Please tell me, please. And this is where we will totally run the train off the track for a second. But I've always had this vision. Right. This is my Oscar winning vision. And stay with me on this because I think it's brilliant. So basically, we can combine all of the elements of these huge, like Oscar sweeping films and put them into one movie. So it's Nazi occupied Germany. Now, there's a German guy who is this gay Jewish guy, right? A gay German Jew. Who is a fantastic tea maker, right? He's like a world-renowned maker of teas, all different kinds of teas. Any kind of flavor of tea. He's just the Jesus Christ of teas. And he's Jewish, so that makes it even more convenient. So anyways, he's this really good Jewish tea maker. And, the only reason he's been, like, spared, Auschwitz, is because he has to make teas for the Führer. So he's torn up inside because, obviously, he's not really on the chopping block, but, he's sort of like working for the man. And then he falls in love with the autistic son of an SS soldier. Okay? It's a forbidden love affair, right? And here's what we're going to call it. We're going to call it Teabag. I'm telling you, this is going to literally sweep the Oscars. I'm giving that to you,
PJ. I think it has a lot of potential. However, the downside is when people try to Google your film, they're going to get everything that they didn't want, unfortunately.
what we are going to do is we're going to run
a glaring issue.
We're going to run a lot of business and push a lot of business towards some very niche specialty sites. So
you almost have to. You're really going to have to call Google Analytics and see what they can do for you, I think, on that, because something tells me when someone, even if somebody types in Teabag the movie, they're still going to get something other than your Oscar-winning still.
Well, just the fact that they'd be looking at Teabag than German, they're going to get the worst of the worst.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be really bad.
The absolute creme de la creme of human depravity.
Ironically, though, you gave me something I can look up when I take my 45-minute shower tomorrow morning.
It might end up turning into a 90-minute shower. You never know. I mean, can you ever really get clean after watching that?
No, yeah, that's true. Those are like all-day showers.
Yeah, you might want to grab like the Soften scrub and a steel wool brush and take them in there with you. Okay, so obviously people are definitely going to get what they pay for. I mean, it's volumes of blood horror stories, which is, right, again, very self-explanatory. You can't really go wrong with that. Now, if we could just diverge a little bit, because obviously we haven't done that already, and sort of... go back to the beginning, the genesis of PJ Starks as a horror fan and then as a horror creator. So when exactly did you get the bug as a filmmaker? How did that come about?
Long story short, I got a video camera when I was really young and immediately just started, you know, the RCA camcorder, just started making my own home movies. And it started out with the same fascination, you know, a lot of visually artistic people start out with, which is just it's glued to their hand. They're walking around recording everything, no matter how asinine it is. And then eventually, and at the same time, I was really into writing. I wrote a lot of stories and short stories and things of that nature. And then eventually I kind of melded the two together, and it became this love for creating stories. And obviously, a lot of the earlier stuff, they were creating really bad stories that were kind of mishmashed together. But eventually, I kind of started to hone my abilities, and it's landed me at this point. So it seemed to kind of work out.
So let's talk about the evolution of Volumes of Blood. So how did the concept come up? How did the process of assembling the creators go? And let's just sort of talk about, just briefly, sort of this, inception to execution of the first Volumes of Blood.
Well, the first one came out, before the films even came to be, I wanted to do an anthology film for a really long time. I know anthologies typically don't do well, and they also don't sell well, but I'm a big fan of anthologies, and I've been wanting to do one for several years, and nothing, I could never really get anything to coalesce. And I started this program at the Davis County Public Library called Unscripted, and it's directors come in and screen their short films, and then they do basically, they screen the film a second time and basically do a live DVD audio commentary and talk about the film as they're viewing it the second time. And it became super popular, and I eventually handed it over to the library. It's still going on now. And along that process, we did what was called the Unscripted Film School. And then we shot two short films simultaneously in the library, one on the first floor, one on the second floor. And it was so successful that the guy running the library at the time, Jim Blanton, said, you know, hey, I really want to do this again, but I want to do something bigger and better. And so the next day I went to work and I just started throwing around some ideas. And I thought, well, how about instead of two films simultaneously on one night, we do a series of short films, short horror films, because that one of the two that we shot originally was a horror film. And it actually went on to do screened at some festivals and things like that. And it went far beyond its reach that we thought it was going to. And because of that, I was like, hey, this kind of opens the door to give me the opportunity to do that anthology I've been wanting to do. So I came up with this concept called Volumes of Blood, where it was just a series of short horror films shot over a period of months at the same location in a library, and they all revolved around that setting. And I waited until one of my very last break of the day. I called Jim at the library. I pitched him the idea. He absolutely loved it. And at that point, Volumes of Blood, the concept, was greenlit. At that point, I knew I hadn't directed anything in a while. I'd only, like, done some producing and event creating and that kind of thing. And honestly, at that point, I'd done so many different types of events, like a film festival. And I also help co-coordinate the the film festival at Scarefest and stuff like that, I started feeling like an over-glorified wedding planner or something, like, because I really hadn't started. I started doing films, and the next thing you know, I'm doing all events. And
you don't want to end up like the Jennifer Lopez of horror. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. So if my next movie is like Enough Too,
yeah,
then that should tell me something.
Always a bridesmaid, never a bride, PJ.
So at that point, so I was like, all right, well, I'm going to direct one of the shorts, and I wanted to do something that was completely outside of what I do, because I'm a real big Kevin Smith fan, so I love dick and fart jokes and slapstick humor and stuff like that. And on the horror side, I love gore and stuff like that. So I really wanted to try to stay away from anything that was like super bloody or, you know, had any cussing or dick and fart jokes, if you will. So that's why I opted for basically making the silent black and white ghost movie. So it's, aside from the psychological drama that I've done, it's probably the closest artsy fartsy thing that I have done. But anyway, so at that point, I came up with some concepts for different short stories. And then I contacted Todd Martin, who is an author. He's written some horror books and things, and he actually wrote the short horror film that we made for the first Unscripted. And I asked him, hey, do you want to come on board and help me write it? And he said yes. And then I thought of all the independent film directors that I've met and wanted to work with or have become really good friends and wanted to work with. And I just started contacting everybody and saying, you know, hey, here's what I'm doing. Here's the stories. I think you would be perfect for the script and this, that, and the other. One of which I wrote 13 After Midnight. And I wrote it specifically for Jacob Belinsky to do because he's a really good friend of mine.
Mm-hmm.
And he was towards the tail end of Three Tears on Bloodstained Flesh. And so, you know, he accepted and he read the script and he liked it. And so really, it, as far as getting directors for the film, it was fairly easy because I wanted to – you know, there were so many different ones that I wanted to work with and things that were friends of mine that it was pretty simple. And then Nathan Thomas Milliner, who I'm sure you're familiar with, he had just come off of directing A Wish for the Dead. And he was really looking to direct something else. So I contacted him and was like, hey, I'm doing this anthology. Do you want to work together? Do you want to do this? And he read some of the scripts, and the one that really jumped out at him was the one called Encyclopedia Satanica. And he said, I'd really like to direct this one. And he took a crack at doing some revisions on the script, and that's how he ended up getting the writing credit, because he kind of gave it an overhaul.
Mm-hmm.
And but that's the one he ended up directing, was Encyclopedia Satanica. So that's really how it came to be. So then we just scheduled all the dates, made sure the cast and the crew, for the most part, I pretty much casted the entire film. It was based off of, you know, actors that I knew or actors that I'd want to work with. And, you know, we had some drop out along the way, and we had to fill in with, you know, some suggestions or other actors that wanted to be a part of the project. And, you know, the rest is history. We ended up making the film over a period of 5 months, and premiered last year on Friday the 13th here in Owensboro. So, and it's done incredibly well, much, much better than any of us had, you know, anticipated.
Now, when we had screened the film, strangely enough, your acting turn got some of the biggest and loudest reception. Do we get to see you reprise yourself in the Volumes of Blood horror?
Well, you know, it's funny. Since the first film, this is kind of a two-part answer to your question. But since we did the first film, I have decided that I basically I want to create like a Volumes of Blood universe. because of the reaction to the film from the critics, from the people who have seen it and loved it, I kind of decided that, you know, there's a lot of filmmakers out there that kind of flounder and they try to decide, you know, what am I going to do next, and this, that, and the other. And I've always come back to horror.
Yeah.
And the great thing about doing an anthology is I love collaboration. I love working with other filmmakers. And, you know, the one really good thing about doing an anthology piece is that people with short attention spans can enjoy it because it moves at such a fast pace that, you know, you're literally going from
right.
one story to the next. So you're going to find something that you like. And so that's when I kind of made the decision that I won't say I've found my calling, because I'm sure I'll do some other things, but ultimately I think what I'm going to do, my legacy, if you will, is I'm just going to continue to create and expand on essentially what is the Volumes of Blood universe, and that's what we're doing with the sequel. And now, to answer your question as to whether or not I will be reprising my role, I don't want to say too much because it would give away the first film. So I'll just say I may or may not be in the sequel, but because there's so many, oddly enough, like I never really heard the term meta used for a film necessarily,
right.
for the way a film is made until, which it had been done before and it has been used before. But like once I started reading a lot of the reviews for the film we made, a lot of the reviewers were like, it's got this meta twist at the end. And I'm kind of like, huh? So I ended up doing that without intentionally meaning to. So
you were breaking the fourth wall. You didn't even know the wall was there.
Yeah, exactly. So basically what happened is there's almost a universe within a universe of Volumes of Blood. So there's like, there's the fake side of Volumes. It's kind of like real life. There's real life where we're at right now. And then when you're sitting there watching a film, there's, you know, you're experiencing fake life.
Right.
With someone who doesn't really exist and that kind of thing. So that's kind of what Volumes of Blood is to a degree. There's this real life that you're experiencing, and there's the fake life side of the film. So, you know, you don't really know which part you're experiencing until it catches you off guard. So that seemed to be one of the really successful components for the first movie. And we decided that, you know, that's definitely what we're going to be doing again with the first one, with the second one.
Now, what can people expect from this second film? I mean, because obviously you're ramping up, you're gearing up, and you've got some interesting talent even as far as scoring the film. So, you know, do you feel that, you know, there's also an evolution of filmmaking, but essentially there's an evolution here where it's refining and, you know, there's obviously this amorphic quality to any sort of first film. But, you know, once you start getting into the idea of we've done this before, we can polish out some of the, maybe, you know, some of the rough edges. So what are people going to expect from the second one? I mean, as in, what do you think you've learned from the first one going into the second one that people might expect when they see it?
Well, the best answer I can give as far as what we have learned, and this really goes with any project, but every time you make a movie, you learn about what not to do the next time you make a movie. So that's what we've done with the sequel. We took everything that, you know, because basically we are, you know, we're a bunch of horror fans ourselves. And I've said this a million times, but, you know, but I mean it. You know, we're horror fans, and we're taking our love for horror and we're making a horror film for people just like us, for the horror fan. So that's why there's so many different types of aspects to Volumes of Blood, because with the first film, you know, you get a monster movie, you get a ghost movie, you get slasher films, you get horror comedy. And so that's why I've always said it, you know, no matter what kind of, there's torture porn parts of it. It's like, mm-hmm. you know, it's a melting pot of genres, of subgenres of the genre itself. So that's really, what we wanted to do with the second one, but we're taking a little bit of a different approach. We are refining things. We are making things a little more serious, a little darker in tone on this one. There's still comedy. There's still some comedy thrown in. There's still some meta moments within the film. But one of the things that I said going into the sequel is that, you know, if we're going to, anytime you do a sequel, you have to try to make it better than the predecessor. And that's exactly what we're doing with this film. You know, I mean, on the story side, we've done everything we can to really, you know, when we sat down and wrote the stories, it's Nathan and I, you know, we came up with, it's basically just taking, you know, everything we've learned from a story standpoint, especially from the first film, like what worked, what didn't work, and going into this one and saying, you know, we really do need to have more characters that are fleshed out, stories that are a little more fleshed out. Obviously, the body count is going to be much larger. In the first film, we had 13 deaths on screen, and it was 19 deaths total. And when I went to Lisa, who's our special effects supervisor, I was like, you know, hey, we're doing a sequel, and here's what we want to do with it as far as going bigger and better with the gore factor. So we're doing, there's 22 deaths in this one, and 20 of them are on screen. So you're definitely, so for those people who sort of kind of complained that there wasn't enough gore in the first one, you're getting your volumes of blood in the sequel, I can tell you that.
Well, I mean, you know, you have that subset of horror fans.
Yeah, there's going to be. But the other thing, too, is, you know, we did a much larger and more drawn-out casting process with this one. You know, because the one thing that horror films, especially independent horror films, tend to be synonymous with bad acting. I mean, sometimes you come across those gems where it's just super solid acting across the board. And in the first film, I would say for the majority, the acting was pretty good. There were a few parts I thought that were not real strong, but with this sequel, we decided that, you know, we are really going to pull out all the stops, and we're going to make sure that, you know, every actor that we bring in is as strong of an actor that we can get. So that's going with, I've partnered up now with, his name is Eric Huskisson. We've started a whole new production company now. So it's not going to be Verite Cinema anymore. It's Blood Moon Pictures is our new company. And he did mainly props, and he was also the face. So he was the killer with the mask and the trench coat. And so we partnered together, and he's helping me produce this one. And so that's pretty much what we've decided to do with the, you know, we're upping the gore quotient. We're upping the acting quotient. Everything that we can do to make it better from story on. You know, we're doing everything we can to make sure that it will, is a terrible word to use right now, but trump the first movie. So.
And our readership just went on a downward spiral. Well, talking about talent, I mean, and talent is obviously something that always has to be looked at for any kind of production, especially for a production that's evolving the way yours is. What kind of recognizable talent are we looking for the second film? Because you've already started acquiring some names, correct?
Yes. Yeah, we right now, as far as like from an acting standpoint, we have Moses Mosley, who was in The Walking Dead. He was one of Michonne's pet walkers.
Right.
And I met him at a convention several years ago, and then it seemed like every convention I went to, he was there. And we just kind of, we kept talking every time we saw each other, and then we started keeping in contact via Facebook. And then when this came along, I contacted him, and I was like, you know, hey, I think you would be awesome to work with. Are you available? Are you interested? I sent him the script, and he really liked it. And the segment that he's going to be in is called Bloodbath. And it's directed by John Maynard, who did a short called Nearly Dead. And And then from the score standpoint, and this is kind of, it's kind of funny how this kind of came to be, because I had heard about The Barn and I saw the trailer for it and I thought it looked awesome. And then when I was coming up with, with the sequel, I was like, you know, I bet this one has seven stories. The first one only had five. This one has seven. So I was like, and then with me directing, technically I only had to find four directors. But on this one, I then had to find seven directors. So it was a little bit more time consuming and a little more difficult too, because I wanted to reach out and find some talent and some people that I had never worked with before. Because really, that's, you only get better by working with people and putting yourself in situations where, you know, you have to work with someone that you've never worked with before, and making those relationships work and build on those working relationships. So,
right.
So I kind of reached out whenever I saw the, and I'd heard some really good things about The Barn. So I just reached out and talked to Justin, who directed it, Justin Seaman, and was like, hey, you know, I'm looking to do a sequel, this, that, and the other. He had heard some stuff about Volumes of Blood, and he was like, oh, yeah, cool. So we got talking there, got him on the project, and ironically, Rocky Gray, who is the current guitarist for Living Sacrifice, and he was the former drummer of Evanescence, he did the score for The Barn. So Rocky and I got in contact and we were just talking, and he had offered up his services as far as like saying he was interested in composing the sequel. And Rocky is an awesome composer. I mean, he's done some he threw some stuff my way to let me listen to it. I mean, he's done some really cool stuff. But Tony McKee, who did the score for the first film, was already signed on to do it. So we had already brought him back. So that was another thing I wanted to do, is try to bring back as many of the people as I could from the first film.
Right.
Because you don't want to entirely reinvent the wheel. And
right, yeah.
So Rocky and I got talking, you know, and he's like, hey, if there's anything that I can do to be more involved or to help out, just let me know. And he signed on to score Justin's segment, which is called The Death Day Party. And then after that, I was like, well, I want to have like an opening, some kind of original opening score that's completely different sounding than the rest of the film. So I contacted him. I said, hey, you know, would you be interested in doing this? He said, yes. He asked me if I had any ideas as far as a sound or tone. And basically what I told him was, I've always, always loved the theme for John Carpenter's In the Mouth of Madness.
Yeah.
So I wanted something like that, only heavier.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, okay. And literally in a matter of days, he sent me his track. And it is phenomenally awesome. It's going to work really well.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just one of multiple things that we've got. For instance, former WWE wrestler Sir Mo, he was in Man on a Mission. He's making his acting debut in the film. So that's another kind of cool aspect that we've got. And then, of course, just the film itself, having, like, all the local and regional talent. And the great thing is, too, is that this time we've really reached beyond our borders, and we're bringing in, you know, like, Justin, he's from Pennsylvania, so we'll be bringing him in from there. And we have some people coming from, like, Nashville, Tennessee. Moses is from Atlanta, Georgia, so we're bringing him in from Atlanta. So, you know, we're really doing everything we can to make sure that, you know, this movie is bigger and better, and ultimately the film that everybody who would say, hey, I really would like to see a sequel to the first film, it's worth their time to sit down and watch.
Well, let's talk for a minute about the crowdfunding aspect of it. So what are you looking for as far as crowdfunding? How can people participate? What elements is the crowdfunding going towards? Just educate us a little bit about the crowdfunding movement surrounding Volumes of Blood Horror Stories.
Okay, so we our special effects budget is pretty big. And, you know, there's with this one bringing in so many different people and stuff like that, you know, there's all that financing that has to be done for hotels and things of that nature. But then, you know, we really wanted to make sure, as far as the special effects were concerned, that we were going to have every resource available to us financially. And I originally wanted to stay away from doing a crowdfunding thing, but we, as with any independent film, you have some hurdles. So while we had the financing coming in, it wasn't coming in as fast as we would like it to. So that's when we decided that we were going to pull the trigger and do a crowdfunding campaign, and we reach out to the fans, reach out to people who are really into horror films. And that's because we're so into practical effects. I'm huge into practical effects myself, and that's all the effects in this film are all done practically. But obviously they come at a cost. So in order to do this, we thought we would kind of reach out and see how many people in the public we could get on board, support the film, support what we're doing. So everything that we get from the actual Indiegogo page is going to go towards special effects, because there's a lot of special effects in this one.
Well, and practical effects, obviously, there's that level of quality that you're trying to attain and
right.
keep consistent. And, I think that most horror fans would obviously rather see that attention to detail and then contribute in order to see it than, get what we're sort of used to, which is sort of a watered-down version of what, we're sort of celebrating that happened 30 years ago.
Right, absolutely. And that's another thing I'm trying to do. If CGI is done right, it can be okay. But, you watch films like The Thing and you just ask The Howling or American Werewolf in London, you say, what happened to that?
Yeah.
Especially slasher films. You look at, because, they didn't have all the CGI, so they literally had to create the full body act, like the life casting of the actors and things, and really pull off some really cool and interesting things very cheaply. And, that's what we want to do too, but like I said, there is a bit of a cost, and we wanted to make sure that at the end of the day that the effects that we're doing do look good, that, like you said, attention to detail, that when it's pulled off, it does look realistic and as good as we can possibly make it. I call Lisa my personal Tom Savini, because she pulled off some things in the first film, not only cheaply, but kind of sometimes, she pulled some things out of her ass that I didn't really think that I wasn't sure she'd be able to pull off, because sometimes, it was very run and gun on the first film, but this mm-hmm. film is not run and gun. So if people really knew, what Lisa was able to do on the first film, like, naturally you can see it, but sitting there and watching it is different than sitting there experiencing it. And I mean, she had to do things very quickly, very cheaply. Her effects budget was like $1,200 on the first film.
Right, right.
But if you look at it, it looks like we spent way more than $1,200 on the special effects in the first movie. So.
Oh, most certainly. I mean, undoubtedly, you outdistanced your budget as far as quality. You really did. Now,
thank you.
People who are looking, obviously, to contribute, especially those of, my listeners who are, taking a look at this audio and deciding, hey, this is something that I obviously want to, sort of become a little mini producer on and, slide some money your guys' way. How does a person go about doing that? Where do they go online to make that happen?
Well, they go to the Indiegogo page. Basically, you can go to our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/VOB anthology. We also have a Twitter page, which is Volumes of Blood, #VolumesOfBlood. And, you can find links to the campaign there. Or you could just go to you could go to Indiegogo and type in Volumes of Blood Horror Stories Blood Drive, because that's what we're calling it. We're calling it a blood drive because that's really what we're driven to do at this point, is to get as many funds as we possibly can, because like I said, you know, we're horror fans. We're making a horror film for horror fans, and we want to make sure at the end of the day that the people that are going to watch this film are going to be satisfied with it, that we'll be satisfied with it. So by checking it out, like I said, you go to the Indiegogo page. I could sit here and give you the spiel, but it's, you know, there's some really different perks on there. You have an opportunity. You can just, for instance, for $12, you can have a chance at winning a cameo in the film. But for one more dollar, you have the chance at playing a corpse in the film, a featured dead body. And if it's one thing I've learned over the years of doing horror films, for some reason, getting killed or being dead in a horror film is on everybody's bucket list.
It's a rite of passage.
Why? It really is. It's, you know, I guess it gives people that closeness to death that you can't get and then still walk away and be okay.
Well, it's one of the few times that you can watch yourself die over and over again.
Right, you know, I guess it's a way at some people getting back at their mothers, maybe, because I've never met a mother who was real happy with seeing her child get killed on film either. So
there's something Freudian here. I'm sure we could analyze it. We could figure it out.
Right. So, you know, and you could get autographed DVDs and posters and all that normal stuff. But there's a bunch of things on there, I think, that aren't atypical with your normal crowdfunding campaign. And then, of course, the higher end stuff is, you know, if you want to be an executive producer, for one of the medium range, depending on what you consider medium range, one of the more medium range perks, you can actually get killed, like full blown killed in the film. And it's funny because Eric, the other producer, was like, well, what are we going to do if somebody takes that? And I'm like, look, we will tailor it to them. So essentially, if somebody takes this perk, they'll get killed in the sequel, and it will be something that's tailored to them. It'll
right.
be a scene that's made up, or death, you know, in a scene specifically made for them, which I think makes it that much cooler, that much more special.
There's their chance at mortality / immortality, and
exactly.
and to have it very, very customized to their liking. and I encourage everyone, definitely go to all the pages that we've mentioned. Take a look and see how you can get involved. The perks sound great. We're very excited to see what's going to happen with the second film, what kind of scares and surprises you have in store for the audience. Do you have a couple minutes off the air for me, PJ?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, and again, I encourage everyone, also check out Volumes of Blood, the first film, if you haven't already. Definitely encouraging everyone to participate in this, because, you know, this is a really good sort of homegrown movement to have this second film and have this kind of crowdfunding aspect associated with it, especially a lot of the perks that you're offering. So I think it's a great thing. Again, we will post this and all those links on the site as well with this audio, so that people who are listening will have a forum right there to express themselves, to go directly to those pages, to obviously go directly to those pages and hopefully donate. So all of that will be right there at their fingertips. We want to thank you so much for taking time out tonight, PJ, and talking about not only the first film, but obviously what you've got planned for the second. We're all very excited about it here. So thanks again. We look forward to seeing Volumes of Blood Horror Stories. Thank you so much, PJ.
Thank you.